Hello, everybody. How are you guys doing? Excellent. Bright, shiny faces out there. So you guys know you guys are all in the How to Start a Nashville Brewery seminar. Is that right? Okay, good. I'm going to talk a lot about that today. We're of course here talking about implementing a field quality program. How do we want to maintain quality in the field? So I think we all know this, but our beer takes quite a travel from the time that it leaves our brewery to the time it gets to a consumer. And we put a lot of love and talent into these beers that we're making, and as soon as that beer leaves our docks, it's kind of out in the big bad world. And so that when that beer leaves our docks, we put it on a truck. We hope we know what's happening with that truck between the time it leaves our brewery to the time it gets to our wholesaler. You know, maybe we have refrigeration standards with that, but we hope we know what's going on there. Once it gets to the wholesaler, how is that wholesaler storing that beer? What temperatures are they using? How are they rotating? Are they paying attention to the best buy dates? Are they making sure that it's getting out of their warehouse with enough shelf life to actually make it through the life in the retailer? And then how do they deliver that beer to the retailer? And what temperatures are we dealing with when they deliver that to a retailer? Once that retailer receives the beer in the off premise, who's rotating that beer? Who's making sure that beer is in date? What are the temperature specs inside of that account? In the on-premise, draft quality, we're getting into a whole other world once we're in draft quality. That beer is traveling through an entire other system prior to getting to the consumer. So who's cleaning that system? What processes are they using? How much time are they spending cleaning it? How often are they cleaning it? The gas source that beer is on. We're all putting a lot of thought into the carbonation level that it's part of the beer's recipe. We're putting a lot of thought into the carbonation level of these beers that we're making prior to sending them out. But we put it on a draft system, and who's to say what the carbonation level is going to be once that beer is on that draft system? So there's all of these factors, and these are all the factors of a field quality program. And so at this point, the beer has spent probably more time out in the trade than we spent actually making that beer. And the beer has gone through more processes than it actually took to make that beer. And we're putting most of our resources into making that beer and not putting many resources into protecting that beer once it leaves the brewery. So that's kind of what we're going to talk about today is how do we maintain that. And so we've got a panel here that of a wide variety from Sierra Nevada at 800,000 barrels of beer to New Glarus and Sierra's nationwide. New Glarus, 100,000 barrels of beer in one state. So a field quality program can look like a lot of different things, and we all implement our field quality programs in different and unique ways. And so hopefully today you're going to see some of those similarities and some of those contrasts of how we all implement field quality programs. So I will let these guys go ahead and introduce themselves. And I apologize, I'll introduce myself, Matt Meadows with New Belgium Brewing Company. I am our National Field Quality Manager. And Jeff, you want to go ahead and introduce yourself?
Thanks, Matt. Jeff Schaefer with New Glarus Brewing Company, only in Wisconsin and staying there, just in case any distributors in the room wanted to know. How many distributors are there today? Raise your hand. Perfect. I started in distribution at keg delivery, graduated to sales, and then on to supplier and working at a brewery now as sales director at New Glarus for the last 3 years.
I'm Neil Witte with Boulevard Brewing Company in Kansas City, Missouri. I started at Boulevard in 97 as a brewer, and after about 3 years working as a brewer, the position that I hold now was created field quality manager, and I transitioned over the course of about a year or so into that job, and have been doing it ever since. We make about 150,000 barrels. It's about what we did last year. When I started, I think I was trying to just remember off the top of my head, we were probably doing about half that amount when we started the program. I came from production, but it's this position that I hold now is pretty much wrapped up in sales as far as who I report to. I report to the director of sales for the company.
Hi, Rob Garrity. I work for Sierra Nevada, and I'm called Trade Quality Manager. My career is kind of split up into two things. I've got about half production brewery experience and about half sales. I've done some field quality work with an Irish company that makes a stout, and started doing field quality work at Great Lakes Brewing Company in Cleveland, and have been doing trade quality work with Sierra Nevada for the last couple of years.
Nice. Well, thank you, guys. So we're going to go through a few key topics today and answer a few key questions. If you guys wouldn't mind, we're going to try to bust out a lot of information in a short period of time, so we're going to leave some time at the end for Q&A. So we'll hold our questions for about the last 15 minutes or so. But we're going to go through the logistics of a quality program. If anybody printed out any of the materials, this is what you'd have in front of you, just a note-taking area. Logistics of a field quality program, quality standards, wholesaler communication, measurement, training and education, and then we'll finish up with additional questions. So pose a question to our panelists here. We did our introductions. What brewery do you work for? Who implements your field quality program at your brewery, and how do they do it? Rob, you want to start us off?
Sure. The way our program works is it runs through our sales chain of command. I actually report to a director of sales. I kind of implement the program, and the program kind of makes its way through the organization through our sales chain of command. So we have director of sales and then regional managers who direct and manage the activity of our distributor management team and our area managers and street sales reps, that kind of thing.
Nice.
Yeah, like I said before, ours at Boulevard is structured similarly to Sierra Nevada's in that it's in the sales chain of command. But as far as actual field quality work, I mean, I'm the guy that does it. I'm one guy with, officially 21 states where we distribute beer. It's a pretty tall order in that sense, and there's no lack of work to be done for sure. So I'm pretty much the guy doing most of the work. There are some responsibilities that, that I've delegated out to some of our sales reps. I rely on them for, several different things that, as far as audits and some things like that that we'll be talking about in the course of the day. But it's basically just me.
Perfect. And we come from a small footprint, but we've had to ask everybody at the brewery to get involved, but I report to our president, Deb Carey, and then we have three retail quality people, retail quality consultants, one with a heavy background in draft line cleaning and maintenance, and two guys with a heavy sales background so they can communicate our message from the technical aspects into the sales aspects, that why it makes sense for us. So we got three guys that day-to-day do the field quality, and I'm responsible for making sure that our distributor network is trained to our specifications that we outline. So.
Nice. Yeah, and at New Belgium, I'm our national field quality manager, and for a long time, it was just me that was doing it. Over time, we've kind of built up our team, and now we're in 29 states. We have five regional quality rangers, is what we call them. So we have five regional quality rangers, and that's basically who executes our program. But we also rely heavily on our sales team. So we have our beer rangers, which are our sales reps throughout the country. We rely heavily on those guys. They all submit 25 quality surveys every week to us. Those live in a database that we are able to check. When we started doing that, it was just a simple Excel spreadsheet emailed to us. Now it's going into a database. But all of, like I said, we rely very heavily on those sales folks to really implement our quality program. So what brewery standards are important to you guys, and how did you as a brewery decide on those? Rob, you want to start us?
Sure, yeah. The standards that are really in place have to do with kind of like target ed at three different areas. So one is the distributor warehouse, where we kind of look at things that affect freshness. The big one would be storage temperature. And the second thing that would factor into that would be days of inventory. We also evaluate a rotation system, and then things that concern themselves with package integrity. We want to make sure our loads land without damaged package, and that things don't happen at the distributor level to damage product. On the off-premise, it's really code, rotation, and package integrity. We have that wrapped up in a pretty simple way. And then in the on-premise, it's really aimed at draft. And this is where it gets a little more complicated because it's, you know, weird things happen to beer when it goes on draft sometimes. But, again, we're looking at code. We're looking at temperature. We look at gas and pressure, line cleaning, and then a couple presentation aspects, and then ultimately the taste of the beer.
Nice.
They were decided on based on, you know, things we'd been doing for about 30 years with some ideas that, you know, we had developed with the BA draft quality committee, things like that, some shared ideas, and then just general exchange between the brewery and sales team.
Yeah, at New Glarus, we've hung our hat on draft quality for the last few years. In that we're only in one state, and 45% of our beer sold is in draft form. And a lot of people look at us funny, and they say, "Well, why are you staying in one state?" Well, a few years ago, we had some consultants from outside the industry come into Wisconsin and shake their head like, "I can't get a good pint of beer here." And it hit us in the gut because we're the leader in that state with the small brewers, and we said, "Nah, we're just going to dig deep and stay here as long as we can." And we feel we can got 20 years there just on that draft quality alone without leaving the state. And so draft quality is a huge part of a lot of small brewers as they get going. So we find it very valuable, and that's just the last few years. But we've had a quality standards ever since we got into business, pretty much. Emulated the industry standards as the big brewers had, and now we've refined them over the years and adjusted them to fit our brands as we change. So it's there, but it continues to change and move with the styles of beers that we create. So
nice.
You know, a lot of my focus is in the on-premise. I mean, I do a certain amount of off-premise warehouse focus, but I'd say probably at the top of my list is kind of where the rubber meets the road with line cleaning. You know, I spend a lot of time working with draft departments out in the marketplace. You know, I do work with line cleaners and kind of see how they're doing things and you know, and try and communicate our, you know, some of our basic standards to them. You know, we're, you know, cleaning every 2 weeks, using a line cleaning pump, using the right chemicals, all those things. You know, I'm enforcing that quite a bit. That's really one of my main focuses. You know, a lot of that is, you know, it's interesting because, you know, when you start talking about all that stuff, you know, we have, as brewers, I mean, we all kind of had different ideas in certain ways about some of the specifications for line cleaning. You know, I would go out in the marketplace and I would have a certain set of recommendations and requirements for line cleaning, and Matt might go out and have, you know, similar recommendations, but there might be some things that were a little different, and everybody kind of had their own message. And, you know, where these details come from, you know, is a mixture of, you know, anecdotal evidence, the things that we've actually seen that work out there. It's a, you know, from my end, some of it came from brewery experience, you know, working in the brewery, seeing what types of processes are effective for cleaning tanks and pipe loops and things like that. You know, it comes from, you know, some of it was just conventional wisdom, really. You know, there's you know, things that there's a certain amount of draft guy conventional wisdom that things have been done this way for so long, you know, and then there's, you know, some science that backs up a lot of it as well. And, you know, so and this was kind of the impetus behind the draft beer quality manual, that we, you know, wanted to kind of put our heads together and kind of speak with one voice about all of these details and kind of get everybody on the same page. And so, you know, we've been working on this for quite a while. And, you know, of course, the second edition of the manual just got published last year. And it's actually in the back of the room there for anybody who wants to grab a copy on your way out, if you haven't already grabbed one. But, you know, we managed to get the big brewers on board with us to help create this. And so this is kind of now what a lot of what we're looking to now as far as, you know, to answer that question of, you know, what standards are important and how are they decided upon. This is what we would like to be kind of the baseline for some of these draft, you know, for the draft standards. So this is kind of, you know, the industry speaking as one voice. So, you know, that's just been one of our big projects and kind of one of the things that really unifies us in the sense is that, you know, it's been a big focus of ours.
Yeah, yeah, and to piggyback on what Neil was saying, you know, we started that committee. It was a subset of the technical committee through the Brewers Association in 2007. Yeah, and the initial draft quality manual that you guys have in front of you was published in 2009. And like Neil said, we knew that as craft brewers, there is no Sierra Nevada wholesaler. There is no New Belgium distributorship. So we're in the Bud, Miller, Coors houses. We're in the wine and spirit houses. So we knew we needed to get the big guys on board if we were going to take on this challenge of putting out a set of industry-wide standards. And so we do have several committee members from Bud, Miller, Coors on there. And so they've really helped us with the research and putting together the standards. And like Neil said, just getting that unified voice has been great because we did say a lot of the same things, but maybe we would focus on different things and maybe a few of the standards were a little bit different. And it's tough to walk into a Miller Coors house when you're the New Belgium guy and say, this is how things have to be. And then you leave and they're like, well, the Miller Coors guy is coming next week. I'll just do what he says. But now we all have that unified voice. And so those quality standards when it comes to draft quality, these days we're all basing all of our quality standards off of what is in that draft beer quality manual. For New Belgium, our standards, not just draft quality, but we kind of my catchphrase when I'm out speaking is always fresh, cold, and clean. Fresh are our best buy dates. We want to make sure that everything's in spec. Our temperature specification, so one of our standards is 50 degrees for package and keg. Everything needs to be stored under 50 degrees. That's warehouse delivery and account storage. And then clean is really the draft beer systems, and that's what's outlined in these draft quality manuals that you guys all have. So that's really kind of what our standards are and where they came from. But I'm sure you see a lot of overlap between what all of our standards are. But each of our breweries, we focus on different things within that unified front. Anything to add to that, guys? Good.
Well, I think if you don't have a standard, a distributor will look at you and go, what do you want? Because they're going to be expecting one. So if you don't have some, you know, talk to your friends and publish something similar, because unified voices move mountains in this industry. So that's one of my best recommendations.
Yeah, that's great. And then, yeah, Rob, you want to talk a little bit about the wholesaler standards from the BA?
Right, yeah, because you know, draft beer and draft beer dispense is only kind of one piece of the really complicated puzzle, actually. So we bring up the BA draft quality guidelines to help support people who really don't have their own, you know, dispense standards. You know, there are some brands that are going to have, you know, special dispense criteria, but really as a default, that manual is a great place to start. Another thing that we wanted to show you is some of the other standards that are being created by the BA. So on the screen right now, those are some standards that they put together when they're assessing or making their assessments and choices for, like, distributor of the year. So they speak to kind of some of the same stuff that Charlie talked about this morning, but, you know, obviously a commitment to draft quality and draft line cleaning. You know, on the warehouse side of things, you know, refrigerated storage, that's a big hot button, I know, in our company and also for the BA, where their upper limit is 50 degrees for package and upper limit of 40 degrees for kegs. And then the third thing is actively educate and train sales staff in craft beer. These are all things that, you know, that we all do every day in our jobs, and it's things that we are promoting to integrate, you know, if you guys are looking at, you know, creating a field quality program.
Nice. Yeah, and I think it's worth saying that What we're talking about up here today, you know, we know that there, that some of you guys that are smaller breweries out there, it's not like you can afford to hire this new body that just focuses on field quality. So some of the things that we're going to be talking about here in a minute are really things that we hope that you can apply, whether you're a brewer or you do in-house QC or you're the owner of the brewery or you're a sales rep. Hopefully these are things that you can implement to start monitoring quality. And, you know, down the road, that's maybe when you can hire that full-time person to execute the program and maybe even start to build that team. But hopefully the things that that we'll talk about here in the next couple of slides are really things that you can implement into the everyday work that your folks are doing. And so this goes to how do we want to communicate these standards and requirements to our wholesalers. I think that this is one of the most important things of a quality program, and Jeff already touched on this. You have to let your wholesalers know, and you have to let your accounts know what your standards are. Up front, so hopefully we're speaking to some breweries out there that are planning some expansion. We're obviously in a wonderful time for the craft beer business right now, where a lot of people are growing quite a bit. So as you roll into these new states, as you start appointing these new wholesalers, up front, making sure that you have that agreement about what exactly your standards are for your beer, what that wholesaler needs to do to maintain the quality of your beer. And beyond that, always letting your wholesalers know, always keeping that high level of communication, always letting them know, these are what our standards are, and this is where you are in relation to our standards. This is where we need to improve. This is what you're doing great on. Always having that communication with your wholesalers is going to help ensure that your beer is being taken care of. And I know there's some wholesalers in the room that I've worked with, and quite honestly, it's a little bit of a squeaky wheel approach. You know, we really get in there, and they know that we're paying attention to quality, so they do an excellent job of taking care of that beer. So just making sure that you're communicating with your wholesalers and letting them know, hey, we're looking for this stuff. These are our expectations. This is what we really want to see out there. You guys want to chime in on?
Sure, yeah. You know, communicating the standards for us at Sierra has been kind of a case-by-case thing because we're in 50 states. We have over 300 wholesalers. And, you know, some of them have formal agreements and some of them don't. But really the positions, you know, really had to be landed upon first. And like Matt was saying, we laid out the, you know, what the standards are, clearly outlined what the expectations are. You know, without that, there really isn't much to, you know, really hang your hat on. So I think, you know, first was, you know, landing on the position. Second, communicate it out. And, you know, where I kind of run into a challenge because, you know, I'm the only one at Sierra who's actually, you know, 100% focused on trade quality is really running that message through our sales force. They're the front line with the distributors. And in some cases, we do have, you know, formal agreements with distributors where it lays these expectations out and or lays the standards out. And in other cases, you know, we don't have that. So in that sort of instance, we have to kind of, you know, revisit, you know, those distributors and kind of, you know, relay that groundwork, if you like.
Yeah, perfect. Thanks, Rob. What we noticed is we went through some of our communication items that were posted online and in our distributor manual, and all this was happy-go-lucky, and we're selling a lot of beer. And then looking at going, half of America likes pictures because, well, that's how I learned. So we took our verbiage and started changing it into some photos and real-life experiences and really talking about what goes into making beer and tying it into our quality standards. So we've always started to evolve as a small brewer and see, you know, what our competition's doing, big and small, and see if we can add to the growth of the industry with quality, because we heard it this morning too from the speakers that quality is that separation. You know, the guys that don't care about quality can just get out of here. And we take that to heart, and we really do. It really is a band of good, solid drinking beer, and we noticed that if we started adding pictures and real-life experiences, there in turn, we sold more beer by education. So we've got a little bit of everything from website to formal contract stuff. But at the end of the day, it takes a little bit of everything to keep the communication going.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much what both these guys said, you know, really holds true. You know, initially, you know, I think it's really important to have these things in your distribution agreement. You know, we have a lot of very detailed line cleaning and storage specifications written into our distributor contracts. You know, and then from my end, it's a lot of just communicating this with the guys that I'm working with in the field. When I'm visiting a distributor and working with their techs, you know, that I'm talking to them about, you know, what our standards are and versus what they're doing, or hopefully it's the same thing, and you know, recapping that with management and clearly communicating, you know, any differences there are between what we expect and what's actually being done. And, you know, and also I'm constantly communicating these things through, you know, the draft workshops that I hold both, you know, at distributorships and at the brewery. So, you know, it's extensive education. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute here.
Yeah. And all of us have done collaborative work as well, which is, I think, something that's really great in the craft beer industry. It's something that we're all really lucky that we are such a tight-knit group that we can work together. I've worked with each one of these guys on separate projects in different states in our overlapping wholesalers. And that's really impactful for a wholesaler when you walk in with what they see on the street are two very competitive breweries, and they walk in and they're both speaking that same message. It's really powerful. So just another way to communicate to your wholesalers what your standards are. So what do you guys use to measure quality? And actually, I'll kick us off with this, and then we've got a few slides that we'll show you that are some actual images of some of the surveys that we use out there to measure quality. So these are the things that we do so we know what does quality look like in a particular market. So we're in 29 states, and obviously I cannot get around and physically see at any given time what is in, what our beer looks like in every state, but we do have a set of surveys that we're consistently doing, so we can kind of see what does quality look like for New Belgium beers in this particular market. And one of them I already spoke a little bit about, which are our Sales Ranger weekly surveys. So one of the things that we do every single week, we have 80 rangers across the country that are submitting 25 quality surveys per week, and so we're able to see on a day-to-day basis, real-time, what does the quality in a particular market look like? So in the on-premise, they're checking line cleaning dates, tapping devices, faucets, looking for air compressors, dates rotation, temperature of all the beers. In the off-premise, they're looking for dates rotation and temperature of the beers. They're submitting these surveys, so we're able to see where are the hot spots, what are the things that we need to be focusing on at this given time. That's one of our measurement tools. Our next measurement tool, it's a three-tiered set of measurement tools. The next tier are monthly line cleaning trackers. So this is how we're able to check draft quality. So all of our wholesalers where they can legally clean their own beer lines in a particular state will submit a line cleaning tracker to us. And that's a very simple form that they fill out. It's in a format that is specific to us that has a list of every on-premise account and when that was cleaned, and we have them fill it out in such a way that it's very easy for us to process. In about a 10-minute process, we can take a 700-account market, and I can say, all right, 93% of the accounts have been cleaned on a 2-week cycle, 4% have been cleaned on a 3-week cycle, etc. So having some sort of a tracking system like that so you're able to see how lines are being cleaned. And then the third tier of our measurement tools are our quality audits. And that's a complete audit from the distributor's warehouse all the way through to the off-premise shelf or the on-premise faucet, including delivery. So everything that we talked about in that introduction that can affect the quality of the product, it falls under that audit. So we do those audits once to twice a year, depending on how the market's looking. So those are the kind of our three tiers of our measurement tools. Rob, I think yours is the first one here.
Yeah, we do. You know, we have our measuring process really kind of working through our salespeople. So what we do have is a series of scorecards, one for each of the big categories that I mentioned earlier. So there's a scorecard for a warehouse assessment. There's a scorecard for an on-premise draft account. There's one for an off-premise account. And the way it works is, you know, this is part of what our salespeople do. So they do they sell draft handles. They sell pint nights. They're selling displays. And they're also identifying opportunities and looking after quality. And we look after the quality piece like it's an opportunity to identify. So, the one that's on the screen is our warehouse assessment. We do have, probably a 250-line thing that we can follow. But really, when you're a salesperson and you are in conversations with the distributor, you're really in business to try to motivate them to focus on your beer. So this is what our super simplified distributor warehouse assessment looks like. We're looking, really at just, five basic things. All these things are weighted differently. And the way they're weighted is really about Ken Grossman's priorities. Warehouse temperature is most heavily weighted. Inventory levels is next in line. And then there's rotation, package integrity, and repack, weighted a little bit less than the other two. But the way our scorecarding works is it's not really a black and white pass-fail type thing. We have it set up for meet standard or improvement opportunity or below standard. So if it's in the red zone, that's something that's considered below standard. If it's in the yellow zone, that's okay, but there's an opportunity, there's a way to improve upon that. And if it's in green, that's the ideal world for, according to Sierra Nevada trade quality. Just wanted to emphasize that, the way we have it set up is to identify an opportunity so that at the end of the month, when the warehouse, when the on-premise and the off-premise accounts, when all these things are kind of rolled up into our general market planning mechanism, that this becomes a part of the conversation that a salesperson would have with their distributor, whether it's a monthly or a bi-monthly kind of a meeting.
Nice.
Who's next on there we go. Thank
Neil's on there.
Yeah, that slide is a similar tool that we use. It's kind of similar to some of the tracking stuff that Matt does with New Belgium, but this is our draft audit form. Like Matt was saying, I'm one guy and we sell beer in a lot more places than I can visit on a regular basis. And so, we rely on our salespeople to fill out this form. It shows there's three of them on a sheet and they just fill out, one sheet a week. So they're hitting three accounts a week and it's a pretty quick form to fill out too. It's nothing too complicated. They're just checking all the different parts of the system and just to see if it's clean and give the whole system a letter grade, basically. And then they send them back to me and I can kind of keep tabs on what's going on. And then, and these things can be really telling. I can get a lot of good information about what's happening in a certain market. And then if we do have some issues in a market where, there's some chronic problems or they have some difficulties with their draft department and maybe not doing things the way they ought to be done, these are the types of trackers that we can then, start to tally things up and look back and present this as hard data to a distributor and say, look, this is what we've been finding and this is what's happening and here's how we can try and make it better.
Nice.
Perfect. I don't want to reiterate what everyone else is saying, but we have this similar things. Our sales reps fill out the account name, what they have on tap, what their gas pressure and blend percentages are, temperatures, the whole nine yards. They go through all the packages that are in the account to make sure that the dates are fresh. But that's not one of the issues that we find in our state where line cleaners are third party. We don't control what's going on. Our distributors don't clean lines. And so we found that we're going to focus, since we're only four deep in the sales and quality team, or field quality team, that if we spend our time on stuff that very few people focus on, we'll get a big return on investment. And this is one of them. It's our retail or our draft line cleaner checklist. We develop that based on the draft quality manual. So every specification that's laid out in the manual, we just put in a spreadsheet to show them where they're at and color code it for them and recap it with them, because everybody wants to be certified and approved and, you know, the best of the best. And that's the best thing about this industry is you put your standards up there, people will go get them. And they will knock it out of the park. So we use this, and we've seen line cleaners coming out of the woodwork, changing the way they do business for 30 years. I mean, these guys I met 5 years ago said, "You're not going to teach me anything." I said, "I don't want to. I want to buy you a beer and have a good time. But we can't do that if this beer tastes like crap." So we got this out there to them. And it took some time because we're changing the way people do business. But it's in a positive way. It's concise, it's with backup from very reputable sources, and we're going to keep having fun with them. So these are helpful. They're easy to make. Excel spreadsheets work great, and they're easily readable at each distributor. So,
yeah, absolutely. And these tie directly into the communication that we talked about. This is a great way to relay to your wholesalers, again, what your standards are and where they fall within those standards. This is a recap sheet of a New Belgium quality audit. So the smaller images that you see there are the audit itself, which is line cleaning execution worth 20 points of a 100-point audit. On-premise survey is a 30-point section. Off-premise is also 30 points. Warehouse and then delivery temperatures are each 10 points. Our warehouse is different than Rob's. We look at a lot of the same things. Rob's has a scale where there's a grade. Ours is more of a black and white pass fail. There's one SKU that's misrotated, the entire warehouse will fail. So definitely different approaches to how you can measure quality. But the common theme is being able to communicate clearly to your wholesalers exactly how things are looking and how that falls within your quality standards. So we've talked about our who operates our quality programs. We've talked about how we create our standards, how we communicate those standards, how we measure those standards, and then really where the rubber meets the road is training. How do we train our wholesalers on how to do the right things? They know what our standards are, but how do we do it? How do we execute it? How do we train retailers on these things? And that's one of the very important things. Neil, do you want to kick us off on this one?
Yeah, sure. The training that I do has really expanded quite a bit since I started doing this like 11 or 12 years ago. Initially it was just working with techs out in the field, just hands-on training, showing guys how to do this and do that. And I started to develop some workshops that I hold at the brewery. I do some day-long workshops, a couple different workshops covering any, basic system installation, system specs, line cleaning, stuff like that. I have a basic and an advanced. And I started doing some salesperson stuff. I'd be working with a tech in a major market, and he'd get a phone call from a sales rep who had him drive all the way across town to, change a gas tank or do something really, really silly because the salesperson didn't understand some basic draft stuff. So I've got a short course that I do for distributor sales folks where, I'll come in and do about a 3-hour class on just draft basics so they can understand a little bit about how systems work and do some work on their own. I do some pretty extensive retailer training too on all different levels with, just teaching bartenders and servers about, cleaning glassware and pouring and serving and presentation. And, one of the things that morphed into, as I started to do this type of training at retail, I realized you can go in and talk to bartenders about cleaning glassware and about pouring and serving presentation, but if they don't really understand beer in general, then the message is probably going to be lost. And so I found myself kind of having to back up a little bit and do just some basic beer education, and just so they understand craft beer is all about. So, you know, I'll go in now and do a tasting. We'll taste, you know, 3-4 beers of ours that represent different types of malt aroma and flavor and hop characteristics. And we'll talk about how to talk about beer and talk about all the different common themes when, you know, in beer and how to describe beers to people. And then from there, it's a good launching point for, okay, now that we've talked about all these great flavors in beer, here's how you can preserve these flavors. You know, these are things to look for in your draft system, you know, to see if your lines are clean or not, to, you know, make so you can keep check on that. Here's, you know, here's how to clean your glassware properly and do all those things. So, you know, it's kind of morphed into a lot of just general beer education as well. So, you know, basically anybody and everybody involved in the process from top to bottom on the distributor end and on the retail end, I've got some type of training for them. I've in the past few years, I've been doing retail draft workshops at my workshop at the brewery where I bring in a dozen retail managers and owners and teach them all about draft systems and answer all their questions about their systems, you know, sell them a little draft toolkit. And I've turned retailers who knew nothing about their systems and were always calling for the smallest little detail to have somebody come out and, you know, change the gas tank and stuff to actually changing, you know, changing parts out and doing a lot of the maintenance on their own systems. So, you know, the training aspect for me has been a really key part of our whole program.
Nice. That's great.
Yeah, for us in New Glarus, we found the everybody asking the counter, ask one of their retailers if they've ever been in their cooler before. Anybody? No, seriously. We did that, and I took our president down into a few coolers because I was a delivery guy. I knew what they looked like, but it shocked me at how many times we take for granted that our retailer doesn't go into their cooler. So as we started asking questions and having some fun with some people, we were like, well, wait a minute. Do you want to see what the inside of a keg looks like? Because it's shock and awe. So we cut open a keg and show them from start to finish how that beer comes out, because we take a lot of care to put it in. So we show them how they take the care to get it from the end of the keg to the glass or whatnot on premise. And that's been very impactful. And half of the people I've actually talked to own the bar, never drink at their bar. So they don't know what's going on because there's so many things going on. So don't take for granted what's out there, and we find that every day. And then in the off-premise, our training is we're going to act as if we're the best there is, and we're going to show every rep that we work with what we do. So we will go through every cooler, rotate everything, check dates, and have a great time with it and show them why. And if we find a bad beer, we crack that open right there and show them a good beer and a bad beer, because nothing sells somebody on quality versus until they actually experience it in real life. And that's been huge. So if you have those opportunities, that's really where our training evolves around.
I think if you were to ask, you know, all four of us, there's probably a ton of crossover when it comes to education. And I think we all pretty much leverage education about, you know, what we train on, you know, in similar ways. A lot of it's Beer 101, a lot of it's Draft 101, a lot of it's, you know, interactive things between, like, draft and sensory, things like that. I just wanted to touch on really, you know, like, you know, why we train. And it kind of speaks to what Charlie was talking about earlier. It's about that service piece. You know, he challenged us this morning with, you know, plussing up our service aspects from our brewery. So I know that I leverage training to explain, to lay out, you know, what the quality standards are and also to explain why the quality standards are the way they are. So it's and that's part of that interactive piece. You know, you can illustrate what the beer tastes like when it's handled and dispensed ideally, and you can illustrate, you know, some negative things that happen to it along the way when it's mishandled. And like Jeff said, I mean, there's no way to really, you know, make that statement, you know, more pronounced than actually demonstrating it. I always imagine when a distributor knows that the quality guy is coming to town, I always imagine they're thinking, oh, God, here comes the beer police. You know, they kind of have like a negative thing. But by the time I leave, what I want them and what I hope they envision them to think is, wow, I knew something about Sierra Nevada that I didn't know before. And, you know, I got a couple other bullets in my gun that really helped me understand more about what to do in my daily business.
Nice. That's great. Well, we are shockingly on time. I'm really impressed. We didn't think that this was gonna happen, but we got about 15 minutes left, and so we wanted to open it up for questions. And we do have a wireless mic. We also have the mic there in the middle of the room, and I can also just repeat questions if anybody has. Yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to throw up a hypothetical situation. I'm a ale house owner. I'm going to work one day, and I hear from my staff, we got complaints on the off flavor of your beer, and I'm calling my distributor rep about it today. What happens with you guys in that scenario? Do you have a system whereby that information gets communicated back up?
I can answer it from a New Belgium standpoint and let these guys jump in as well. We have a complaint area on our website, so that would be a place where a retailer could go in. And so I guess I want to make sure I've got your question cleared as well. So you're saying you're letting the distributor know that something's not right, but you'd kind of want the brewery to know that what's going on as well.
It's not that I want to know, but do you want to know?
Yeah.
Do you guys know?
Absolutely, yeah. I think we can all say that we would definitely want to know that. And there's different ways to communicate that. If you know who your brewery rep is, communicating that to them. Like I said, we've got an internal or an external website that you can go to, and you can put that complaint in there, and then New Belgium immediately would follow up with you on that complaint. But if you just report it to the wholesaler, it's unlikely that the wholesaler is going to be like, oh, hey, we really jacked up this account over here and ended up with an off flavor over there. So unless you communicate it directly to the brewery, we probably wouldn't hear it.
Understanding with your distributor to communicate that information back to you for sure?
No, not in most cases. I would say the distributor would probably just take care of the issue, and probably in hopes of not getting in trouble and saying, you know, hey, we messed up. They're just going to fix the issue. Our hope is that you as a retailer would let us know if you see that, and then we would go directly to the wholesaler to get it fixed or fix it ourselves. But I don't know. You guys,
we're a little different, Matt.
Yeah.
We're a lot smaller, in that when we get return kegs from distributors, we have a draft specialist. That's all he does. He'll go back and visit the account where a keg came back from, and usually it has some telltale signs that it's post brewery issues, and trained to those. But our distributors are repeatedly reminded that we want to know everything because. You never know what's going on out there. Even though we're 99.9% sure that everything we leave that brewery is 100%, it's not a perfect science. But, yeah, we actually have all of our distributors notify us when we have issues, and we're proactive about it. But tend to see now that Facebook is somewhere where people are finding places. So our administrator actually takes them off and sends them right to us, and we dispatch somebody as soon as we can. If it's one of us or one of our distributor-trained draft specialists.
Yeah, I think, on our end, you know, I want to know about all those things. We don't have a specific agreement with our distributors where if there is an issue that they come to us about it, ideally, you know, they can recognize these things and know if there's a certain off flavor, they'd be able to recognize if it's something that comes from, like, yeah, the distributor would ideally know how to handle those situations and remedy them. So, you know, be it – hopefully it's not, you know, because they're screwing up. Maybe they inherited a line that was problematic from somebody else, which is a very common occurrence. You know, so it's not something that's necessarily going to come up the chain to us, but it is something where, you know, if I do get that call, I mean, I'm following up on those things personally.
Rob, anything? Yeah,
We have other questions. I think we have to forge ahead.
Sure. Yeah, right up here.
Well, that's where that unified voice of the state guild really could come into play to your advantage, I think. And I'll tell you another thing that sometimes it's a tricky thing to stare the line in the mouth with a customer, but You know, I can tell you honestly, I've had to do it on the quality front quite a number of times. Really, it's selling quality, and it's selling that retailer on the competitive advantages of doing something different. If they really want to be the best retailer, you know, show them the way and, you know, test the waters with them.
Well, one thing I've tried to do is convince them that there is what I call an opportunity cost or a loss that they're experiencing with consumers who don't say anything. They just don't, they aren't repeat buyers because they have a bad experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yet, how do you quantify that versus them saying, well, we cost it out, it's going to cost us $150,000 a unit to refrigerate down to 50 degrees for all the craft beers in our store?
Yeah.
Which is what we've been pushing for. We try to tell them it doesn't have to be 38, you know, but can't you at least go cellar temperature?
Yeah. I mean, these are great points, and in the interest of time, I think we got to get a couple more questions in, but that's a really good, great point to bring up. I appreciate it. Yeah, here. Nice hustle.
I'm going to use the mic. Joe Schiraldi, Vice President of Brewing Operations, Left Hand Brewing Company. In the course of this talk, I heard two of you say definitively that in your organizational structure that you answered to the sales and marketing department, in essence. Two of you were not quite so clear. So the first thing I'd like to ask is, all four of you are structured the same way?
We are, actually, yeah. But all four of us report through sales.
I would say I have a direct line into sales and a dotted line into the various work cells of the brewery through a quality manager who works inside the brewery.
Absolutely. And all of us, I would say, work very closely with our in-house quality teams. I can speak for New Belgium that we like to have it structured within sales because we work so closely with the wholesalers, and we want to have, and we rely so heavily on our sales staff. So we're able to get a lot more done by being a part of the sales organization, whereas if we were felt like we were more of an outside party, you know, from a different department.
And that absolutely seems to make sense for me. And so as we all run out of here today and start making our programs for field quality, and we're going through the details because we all work for different breweries, and even within our breweries we all make different beers, and every one of those beers are going to react differently to the rigors of time and abuse. The mandates that you monitor and enforce, I imagine that your QA/QC labs are the ones that are determining that.
Yes.
And so there's, like you mentioned, a dotted line where you're getting some level of these are the criteria by beer and package that we're looking for, and then from there it's handled within your respective sales and marketing structures.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that the composition of the beer and the stability factors that that factor into how stable that beer is, that's all production quality, and we're all kind of post-production quality. So we're really, you know, our concern is when that beer gets on the truck and until a consumer drinks it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Joe. That was great. Yeah. To change laws or?
Yes, exactly. I mean, obviously working for the guild, but is there some success stories that you can cite that has changed in Washington?
There are, to my knowledge, no states that have reversed those laws. I don't know how much we can necessarily speak about it, but the Brewers Association is very interested in working with states to reform those laws. I guess that's probably about as detailed as I can maybe get on it. But absolutely, we would like to have those laws consistent across all 50 states. There's some differing numbers out there, but I think there's 13 states that fall within that are third-party responsibility. The other states are all distributor responsibility. But yes, the Brewers Association is very interested in getting that consistent. Great question. Thanks.
What's the best way for all of us here to help get involved? standardizing everything other than working with our state guild and implementing our own quality control programs. You spoke a lot about having a unified voice with that, but who's all of us can do that? What's the best avenue for all of us here to get highly involved with that?
I mean, you know, I think the easiest thing is just have it be part of what your salespeople do. Integrate it into their job function. I think sometimes people think that salespeople are just out there selling beer like wild animals and, you know, getting taps and things like this. There's a lot of maintenance and rebuilding of the foundation that is really also part of what salespeople do. I mean, I feel like, you know, I support sales, and I'm part of that maintenance plan, part of that maintenance program. And just, you know, getting over that hurdle and having it be what your salespeople do is actually a major accomplishment, I think.
Yeah, I'm with you. We're selling quality and an experience. We're not just selling a box of liquid. So, absolutely.
Nice. Yeah, that's great. What other questions do we have? Yeah. Yep.
Did you enforce that as a retailer? And if so, how successful are you really?
Sure, yeah, and that kind of relates to our point up here. And that's going to be a brewery-to-brewery standard. Like Rob mentioned earlier, a lot of those standards come from our in-house testing. And for us at New Belgium, 5 years ago, say 7 years ago, Our warm storage allowance was 7 days for our brands. And through some packaging innovations and tweaks to the brewing process, we've been able to increase that to 30 days. So for us, it's a 50-day standard with a 30-day grace period for displays. And we limit that to only retailers. We don't allow wholesalers to use any of that 30 days. We want to maximize that out in the retail trade. For us, it's a pretty easy one to enforce. 30 days is a pretty good amount of time to be able to keep it warm stored. I don't know if you guys have different standards.
Well, it's really not that feasible to manage temperature at retail. I mean, you know, we do have beer on display, and what we try to promote with our distributor training is kind of, you know, use that as backstock and promote the idea of getting that beer cold as fast as possible. But we also know that the more beer we have out there, the faster it gets to a consumer's refrigerator. And really, that's the end game. I mean, that's the goal. I want, you know, we want consumers to enjoy the best beer possible, which is the freshest beer possible. Rod.
Well, yeah, it can affect the beer quality quite a bit, as you know. Any type of strong flavoring in a beer could definitely carry over, depending on the material of the line, depending on how long it's in there, and the nature of what that flavor is. I mean, you know, most of you have probably heard about how notorious root beer is. You know, if you ever put root beer on a draft line, you can pretty much forget about it, you know, about pouring any beer through there again that doesn't taste like root beer. It's a concern. One of the things that I do is try to work with retailers, about how to handle those types of brands. Some retailers are starting to have maybe one line in a certain setup that maybe is easily changed out, or a different setup for those particular beers or something like that. I mean, there's a lot of ways to address that, but I mean, it is an issue.
And we as brewers need to take responsibility for that. If we're putting a beer out there that we know can do that, then we need to be educating our wholesalers and our retailers about putting that on We have a couple of beers, and most of them are in our Lips of Faith program, so they don't stay around too long. But we have a couple of beers out there that will absolutely flavor stain a line. And so we will only put those beers on where we'll kind of say, you can put this on at your own risk, because there's certain line manufacturers out there that say there is no flavor staining that can happen in our line. So we say, put it on at your own risk. We recommend that you put this on a system that the line can be replaced, a direct draw system, a forced air system. So we educate them on those beers. I think the onus is on us as brewers to really take that responsibility to educate people about those beers. Great question. We'll take one more question here and wrap it up.
I've already had one, but are your supplier reps' compensation commission-based, or are they just on the flat?
Our brewery sales?
Yeah, your brewery sales, when we're out there, obviously, depending on how this, you know, they can be somewhat contradictory, at least in the immediate analysis.
Yep.
Interested to hear from all four of you, commission or flat salary?
For your exact reason, no commission. We don't want them to be making choices that are going to compromise the product in the hopes of money. So no
same,
commission.
Yeah, all straight salary.
Ours is straight salary. They do that. There is a bonus structure if they for hitting their goals.
It's salary and bonus criteria that can move from year to year.
Ours is profit sharing, like it's not incentive on performance.
Yeah.
It's not based on how many you sell. No. No. No.
There was one in the back, actually.
Yeah,
he's been raising his hand for a while.
Yeah,
there
sorry.
We go. I mean, the BA manual does have some suggestions. For the first time in history that I know of, stainless steel is promoted as an ideal material on the metal side. What's also promoted is shorter draft systems to the extent to which it's possible. There are some basic things that are kind of laid out in the manual that's different from what most breweries had been promoting really in the past.
So the standards are there, but in a free market, people are going to build the systems that work best for them. But the standards are there, and we hold symposiums around. We just did one at Great American Beer Festival in the fall, where we focused on that quite a bit, the design of a system. So at least from this group, we really try to get out there and educate people on it.
Yeah, there really are material preferences and size preferences that are kind of laid out. But there's so much case by case, stuff out there at retail that it's impossible to really police that. Yeah, want to take one more?
Yeah, we'll take this last question here.
What's the question?
Return beer?
Yeah. Do we ever pull beer? Are you saying, like, if it's out of date, we pull it off the shelf, or we actually, like, refuse sale to the account? Okay. Do we ever refuse sale to an account? For New Belgium and new markets, we have a set of specific criteria that we sell accounts. We only sell draft beer to accounts that pass three basic criteria. Ours is line cleaning on a two-week cycle, no warm stored kegs, and no air compressors. So we will, as long as we're consistent with that, we're able to do that, but the moment that we refuse sale to one account for that reason, it's illegal for us to be inconsistent with that. So that's one thing that we'll do, and we do it diplomatically. If we ever are pulling it off, we'll do it very diplomatically with the account. We don't just unscrew a tap handle and stomp out of the store. But we'll have diplomatic conversations with them, and absolutely. In extreme cases, we will definitely pull product.
Yeah, I mean, we would try really hard to identify what the problem is and supply the solution, obviously, but if that wasn't possible, let's say on draft, we would probably try to move that to a bottle. But I would say most cases we'd be able to figure out what the problem is.
Yeah,
same with us, what he said. I mean, I can't think of an instance where it resorted to that, but there's countless instances where I've spent a lot of time working with them on whatever the issues were, And you know, and sometimes the solution is maybe not having it on draft, but maybe having it in a package or something like that.
Yeah. Yep. Same.
Well, that was great. That's a great question to end on, and really appreciate everybody's time coming in here today. And thank you very much.